Newport Ritchie. All the way. So I was just told a couple of minutes ago that I was speaking, so. Anyhow, my name's Pat, I'm an alcoholic. And I'm sober the grace of God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my sobriety date is July 25th, 1998, I think. And I say that because somewhere in July I got sober. You know, I was weaning myself because there were other people in my household that were alcoholics in my mind. And they went away and got treatment. And I wasn't too happy about that because then I had to look at myself. And I can tell you for one thing, I cried all the way to the airport, and he thought it was because he was going away for 28 days, and the truth of the matter was, it wasn't that I was afraid I was going to be alone in the household running it. I was stuck with me, you know, and I knew I had the problem at that point, but I really was in denial. I wanted to prove to everybody it was not me. I did not have this disease of Alcoholics Anonymous, and alcoholism. Listen to that. See, that's what 10 minutes gets you. The denial was really a big part of me. You know, I used to be one of those people that called out for help in the middle of the night. I wasn't calling out for help for me. Believe me, it was not for me. I did not give my right name. I did not give the right phone number, you know, all the time. Yeah, actually it was like 4 times that I did that. And one night something happened and I gave the right telephone number and I gave the right name. And you all know what happened then. They called me the next day on the telephone and they got me. And they set up an appointment for me to go in and meet with the counselor and them, you know. And all the way there. And I did. I went there and I thought, how am I going to get out of this, you know? So I went and she was really, really very nice. You know, I just told her my sad story about everybody around me, all these problems that I had. And I don't know, I think it was around the 3rd or 4th time I went to see her, she said to me, I think you should try Alcoholics Anonymous. And I did not like that, and I was not willing at that point. And I left her, and I stayed out there for another, I don't know, I think it was about 3 more years from the time span. And I stayed out there, and it got pretty ugly until my husband finally called out for help. And I knew this last time that he called out for help, I knew he was really serious about it. You know, and I was scared, you know, because I knew he was going to leave me. You know, this is it, you know, because if both of us didn't do it. You know, I had a lot of, you know, we had gone to open AA meetings, you know, and I said we went to open AA meetings together. He was in AA at one point, and I was just following him, you know, to be a very nice, supportive wife, you know, and that's why the denial just ran so deep in me. And I had many people tell me, you know, not directly, you know, a boss called me into his office one day. I mean, I was slumped over the filing cabinet like this one day, you know, filing because I was out all night and doing all, you know, and I didn't go to bed. And needless to say, I just got up, showered, and went to work, you know, because I always went to work. But it must have looked like hell. And I was called into his office, and he didn't say anything about me having a problem. He was talking to me about his son, who at that time was in AA. And I still didn't see the, you know, the connection, you know. And I ended up joining that group that his son was in, and not for that reason. It was just that it was pointed out to me, you know, obviously I'm from Long Island, and I joined the Green Lawn Village group in Huntington, Long Island. It was on Park and Maplewood Drive, if I remember right. And I knew the church that I was going to. long before I, you know, admitted that I was an alcoholic to anybody. And I went to that meeting and, you know, at first I tried to stay in the background, but all these people, the women greet you, you know, and it was a men and women's meeting, and they were greeting me. They had, you know, everybody shook their hand like they do here, and, you know, they knew those newcomers. I don't know why we stand out. You know, we're trying to, you know, hide, and we just stand out. And because I don't trust you, you know, there's no way I'm going to trust you. It's a cult, you know. And anyhow, I went begrudgingly, and it was a beginner's meeting, and they met at 6 o'clock, and then there was another meeting immediately following, and I stayed for that one too. And it was on Mondays and Thursdays that this group met, and I made sure I was to every one of those meetings, you know, and I pretty much joined. You know, it took me a while to pick the right sponsor, you know. She sounds good, but I don't trust her, and, you know, so I did. I got a sponsor, and I listened to her, and those people saved me, really saved me. I stayed in the group, and I guess I was, you know, I got a support group. Other than just a sponsor, I got a group of women, because my sponsor told me that she may not always be there when I called, you know, and after a while, I played all the tricks, you know. If I call her at a certain time, she won't answer because I know she's busy. You know, she doesn't want to talk to me. You know, I don't have anything to tell her, you know. I made it through work today. Yes, I went to work, you know. And I didn't have a drink. I rode past the bar, but I did not stop, you know. Anyhow, you know, I called her every day, and when she didn't call me, and when she didn't answer, I would leave a message with a machine, but I was told by her that I had to call somebody else, and I did, you know, and she would get back to me, and then she would say, meet me at the meeting that night, or whatever, and I would go, you know, and she was always there, you know, and a couple of times she wasn't, but she would have, like, one of the other people in the group, you know, her sponsees, that would make sure they meet me, you know. And I stayed sober, you know. I was about 3 years sober when we made the move to Florida, and, you know, financial reasons and whatever, we wanted to get closer to my husband's parents. And I tell you, I had a house that I went to right away. We lived up in Spring Hill. I had everything going for me. I was going to meetings, but I wasn't reaching out. I did not make the connection because I'm sober. I've got it was almost 4 years. I can do this with just going to meetings. You know what? Can't. You know, I stayed sober. But I had that Friday, I was on the phone in Long Island with my sponsor up there, crying, because I wanted to drink, you know, and she told me, when is the next women's meeting? And she knew I didn't like women's meetings, I'd be honest, I didn't like you women at all, you know, I mingled much better with men and women, that was fine, but I just couldn't make the connection with a woman. And she made me go to a women's meeting, and I got a home group in Spring Hill, and I stayed sober. And now we're down here in Newport Richey. And my group is Each Day a New Beginning, and I also have a Bayou Wednesday night meeting that I go to all the time. So those are the meetings that you will see me at most of the time. And I've stayed sober, you know. And no matter what goes on in my personal life, and believe me, a lot goes on, and I go absolutely bonkers, but I don't have that desire to drink. You know, I know I pick up the phone and I'll call somebody, or I'll run to a meeting, and, you know, they look at me and they know, oh, here we go. You know, I'm going to be on the verge of tears, or I don't know what to do, you know, and that's still having time. So, thank you for my sobriety.
Thank you, Pat. Chris will make, Chris, oh, the other Chris. The other Chris will read the tradition.
Chris, alcoholic. All right. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. AA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
And Michael is going to come up and get the chip.
Hi.
My name is Mike. I'm an alcoholic. So here I forgot to mention, we pass out chips celebrating various lengths of sobriety. And for 24 hours of sobriety, we have a white chip. Anybody new or coming back, like a chip? Pink chip? Anybody? That's Eddie. And for 60 days of sobriety, we have this orange chip. Or... And that's Kevin. Celebrating 3 months of sobriety, we have a green chip, 90 days. Anybody? 6 months of sobriety, a blue chip. No takers. And then what do we got? 1 year for, 9 months. What color is it? Oh, purple. There we go. Anybody with 9 months, we have a purple chip. All right. Anybody celebrating a year of sobriety? That's Victoria, everybody. And anybody with multiple years? Yeah. Yes, Jim with 18 and Dan with 10.
All righty, if you haven't had a drink today, thank God. And I'm going to introduce our second speaker, Peter. He's from the Saturday Night Fever group in Tampa.
Yeah. 2 minute warning. Okay. Still start my phone. Make sure Pandora's off. Anybody Pandora just go off in the middle of the nothing worse than anthrax or Little Wayne popping off while you're in an ambulance. Okay. All right, so I'm Peter. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 18th, 2003. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've already seen a few reasons why tonight. It's wonderful to see such a mix of people in here, young, old, different ethnicities, different lengths of sobriety. I'm old, don't worry about it. Man. I'm 30, this is what alcohol did to me. You know, it doesn't matter. Alcoholism is an equal opportunity destroyer, isn't it? It really, really is. But I like our last speaker, Pat, I think it was Pat, right? And did you see her when she came up, how she was smiling, how she was laughing, and also how she told about it 4 years clean. She wanted to drink. Wow. That's pretty powerful stuff, you know. I heard something early on, an old-timer, he said, alcoholics live forever in the shadow of tragedy, and eternal vigilance is the price of sobriety. Looking back, that's a little harsh for me. I don't know if I always live in the shadow of tragedy, but certainly there are times when I know that I have to be on my guard. But guess what? I've recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. That's what the book tells me. And by the way, I might say that's what our literature says and this, that, and the other. I don't just buy into this stuff because people tell me that's what I've got to do. I did that at the beginning because I needed to, right? Because I didn't know what was going on. My first DUI, I got pulled over, and I'm arguing with the cop, and I said, do you know who I am? Like, it's right. I'm like 20. He said, do you know who I am? He goes, oh, another entitled son of a. And I go, no. I said, no, really, do you know who I am? Because I really didn't know what was going on. I didn't know who I was. But in any case, that's how arrogant I could be, right? That's how arrogant I could be. But she was talking about, hey man, at 4 years sober, I needed to call people. And that, to me, is powerful. It's as powerful to hear someone with time talking about life and how it makes them want to drink as it is for someone new to come up or someone coming back. It's very powerful, and I always listen. So, again, I love Alcoholics Anonymous for a lot of different reasons. I'll just give you a brief background just so I can qualify myself. By the way, you know, the book talks about three types of drinkers, the social drinker, who can have one or leave it alone. What? And then there's the heavy drinker who, given sufficient reason, can quit, right? You're going to lose your job, your liver's going to go bad or whatever, so I'm done. And then there's a real alcoholic. I happen to be one of those who, once I put a drink in me, I don't know how long I'm going to continue, how many I'm going to drink, or what's going to happen, right? That's kind of the hallmark of an alcoholic. For those of you who don't know or knew, according to Alcoholics Anonymous, is I have a physical allergy, right? I have an obsession of the mind, you know, and that's the thought that says, oh, he can have a drink, and I have a disease of the body that says, once I put that drink in me, I'm off to the races. So that's the hallmark of an alcoholic, is this physical allergy, this phenomenon of craving, if you will. But if it was just that, if it's just that physical stuff, then I think I'd be okay now. Because, you know, I don't have that physical urge to do that anymore. But I no longer have the obsession to drink because, again, let me qualify when I say I've recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. That doesn't mean I'm not an alcoholic. I'm a lot of things, right? I'm a father, I'm a brother, I'm a friend, I'm all these things. And I am an alcoholic. That's part and parcel of who I am. But I no longer have the obsession to drink, and that's happened since the first time I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. For real. I only came in one other time, but I left after 15 minutes because I felt after at age 26 that this was not for me. And you know, when I get, so I no longer have that obsession to drink. I no longer think, man, I'm no longer single-minded, like looking through the keyhole of a door, right? And seeing that alcohol there. Like, I'm totally indifferent to it if I walk by it. I want to add that up until this moment, right? Up until this moment, because I don't know what's going to happen when I leave here that's going to make me want to take a drink. I'm pretty certain that nothing will happen that's going to make me want to take a drink. I've seen people go through this program with grace and dignity. People dying, months to live, people losing their jobs, people losing their families. All these things that happened to people while they were drinking that made them drink or that they drank over, now happening in sobriety, and they're handling it with grace and dignity. That's amazing. That's amazing. So hopefully I would do that. But guess what? If I wasn't able to do that, I would turn around and grab you guys to help me, right? You know, there's a club in Tampa, and I'm sure there are many all over the place called Club Yana. For those of you who knew, it's called You Are Not Alone. That's what it stands for. You are not alone. And it's true. It's true. That's what makes any fellowship work. I don't care if it's the, you know, the Rotary Club or you know, the Elks or whatever. You know, sorry for any Elks in here, but anyway. I really don't know what you guys do, so anyway. But we have this common problem, right? And most importantly, we have this common solution, right? And we're uniquely qualified to carry the message of recovery to other alcoholics. And by the way, for those of you who identified yourself as addicts here, you get alcoholism for free. True. True. So, anyway, so, you know, I used to tell my story. I'd say, you know, God, I had such a terrible childhood. My brother was a sociopath. I was adopted, so I had this abandonment issue, and then my adopted mother left, and all this sort of thing. And to get attention, I had to cry a lot. I'm a very sensitive, emotional guy. Gosh, you know, I, you know, and this is how I spoke last time I shared, which wasn't too long ago. And but yet, when I think about it, I don't know if those things made me an alcoholic. I really don't. You know, when you think about all the factors that go into our lives to make us who we are, who knows? All I know is I picked up a drink, and bam, bam. One is not enough, ever. You know that drinking like a gentleman thing? If drinking like a gentleman means not getting hammered, I don't want to drink like a gentleman. Ever. My hat's off to you kind of thing. No, I don't. Listen, I will look at you with disdain if you can do that. I'm really not impressive if you could just put down a drink. I'm not. You know, something happened, and I think by the age of 18, when I picked up my first drink, I did some other things before, but I won't go into that. When I picked up my first drink, if it had not been a drink, if it had been a needle or a pipe or anything else, I might have picked that up too. But I happened to pick up a drink. I happened to pick up a drink. And you know, you guys, the name of the group is The Fourth Dimension, right? Our book talks about being rocketed in the fourth dimension. I didn't know what that meant. I really didn't know what that meant. For me today, it means being comfortable in my own skin. Right? Comfortable with who I am. And man, even in sobriety, I have not been comfortable in my own skin. I heard a guy one time say, I am comfortable in other people's skin. And that was scary. For those of you who have seen Silence of the Lambs, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, so I think that's what it means, rocking in the fourth dimension, because it's a totally different feeling than when I, you know, when I was, you know, out there. And so I didn't start drinking until I was 18. And then the legal drinking age in Florida was 18. So I used to say, thanks to the state of Florida, I got 3 extra years of drinking. And I used to blame the bartender, and I used to blame, you know, the distillery, and I used to blame everybody else, the waiter. I used to blame everybody else. Why didn't they cut me off? Why? See, I like to go out and drink. I didn't want to be alone. I had a huge problem being alone. I didn't even want to drink alone until the last few years when I had to drink alone. Because I had 2 DUIs for one, so I couldn't drive. So there's a kind of necessity there. So in any case, you know, so back then, this is kind of the way it went. I got pulled over a couple times, and the cop would come up to the car. He goes, hey, man, where do you live? A couple miles from here. I'll follow you. Get in the back of the car. I'll drive you home. I'll drive you home. And something happened. Somebody, you know, somebody I think of some renown or from some family that had some renown, got let go, and they died. And because of that, this is what I hear. It doesn't really matter. I don't think you see that anymore. Anytime you see those 2 cars lined up, yeah, pretty much. That's it, you know. So a lot of people say, God, I am so glad I didn't get a DUI. So glad. I thank God I didn't get a DUI. I thank God I got a DUI. I thank God I got a second DUI, because that first DUI didn't make me stop drinking. It didn't. I don't know about you guys, but circumstances, as bad as they were, when I wasn't ready to come into Alcoholics Anonymous or quit drinking, didn't mean anything to me. I thought they might have meant something to me, but they really didn't. If they did, I would have stopped, right? I would have stopped after that first DUI. I mean, I was driving drunk. I could have killed somebody, right? I'm driving 100 miles an hour down a one-way street in a residential neighborhood. How crazy is that? How selfish and self-centered is that? Crazy. For me, and this is just an opinion, and it's all opinion, really, I think our bottom is the same, and it's whatever brings us through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. Whatever got me to the point where the pleasure of drinking was outweighed by the pain of it, right? There was just so much pain involved in it. It wasn't fun anymore. It wasn't fun anymore. And some people here, they might think, I've heard this message so many times. I've heard people say the same thing again and again. Well, good. That's the message. We're all carrying the same. We're like McDonald's, man. We're carrying the same message. You know, hopefully. It's not going to differ that much. And the beautiful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is someone's going to tell your story. If you think that you have a story that no one has ever done before, a background that no one's ever done before, guess what? If you were a cannibal, someone else has been a cannibal. They'll go, thanks for telling my story. They'll come up and go, they'll shake your hand and you might pull away or something. So, but seriously, it's a really beautiful thing to have that the camaraderie. And for those of you, again, who don't know, you know, they talk about going to Culver's, a restaurant. That's the meeting after the meeting, for those of you who don't know. That's where people get together and carry on what we're doing here. And if you're new and you've got nowhere else to go, you got a place to go, man. And sometimes the best recovery happens in the meetings after the meeting. And you'll realize that this is family. This is family. If it's a cult, I'm all in. Right? No one locked the door behind me. No one made me put money in the basket. Right? No one, you know, put me in a room, loud music and flashing lights and tried to make me think something. No. No, all they did was say, come on in. Come on. Have a seat. Come on in. And then tomorrow, come back. That's all you got. That's it. That's a cult. I'm in. And that's the weird thing in. I slide in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. After my second DUI, I lost my license for 5 years. And I'm riding my bike. I'm in my 40s. It's pretty, you know, I put baskets on my racing bike so I could get groceries. So, wow. So now anytime I see someone like that, I'm like, oh, man, you are. So I ride my bike to my, well, here's what happened. I was still drinking after that second DUI. And my daughter was living with me at the time. And she said she didn't say this, but to this day, this is what I remember, is she said, you know, you look depressed, you look nervous, why don't you have a drink? And I was like, what? Because she grew up with me drinking. And if you don't think your drinking affects your family, if you think that people don't know that you're drinking, especially your children, you are wrong. You are dead wrong. And I know I'm not supposed to get up here and proselytize and things like that, so I'm just going to pretend like I'm talking to myself in the mirror. So, you know, and I was like, really? So I drank like I drank. I had a nice bottle of tequila or two. And then I woke up the next morning like I had 1,000 times before, on the floor, blood coming from my head, you know, spittle on, you know. And that night, I wanted to drink. And I was pretty certain when I woke up, I would want to drink more. That was my thing. But I didn't want to drink. At that moment, I didn't say the usual stuff that maybe you guys are familiar with. I'm done. I'll never drink again. I'm never going to, you know, and as time goes on, I'll never drink again before 2 o'clock. 2 o'clock rolls around, and then the lines keep coming back, and I cross them again. Well, this time, I was pushed into surrender. I was pushed into surrender. And you know, there's a lot of paradoxes in Alcoholics Anonymous. I think one of the most interesting ones and powerful ones is, in order for me to quit drinking, I have to do what? I have to first admit that I cannot quit drinking. That's pretty weird. That's really weird. I can't quit drinking, so I have to admit that I can't quit drinking. And then I can quit drinking. I don't know. Right? So, wow. So anyway, after a while, I kind of got this idea, like, okay, I'll call Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's not going to be any meetings around here, blah, 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 you know. And guess what? Of course, for those of you who've been around a while, you know, somebody will probably say, yeah, there's one right next door. But there was one 2 miles down the road, straight down the road. And so I rode my bike to this first meeting, and of course, and I had an attitude right off the bat when I could think, and it was in New Tampa, so I'm riding my bike down there, and it's, you know, I was thinking, these people only have problems, you know, their pool pump is broken or something like that, you know. And this is the way I was thinking, right? One alcoholic judging another. And Bill said something about that. It's rather humorous. And I want to relate that to people who are coming back especially. I don't know if you've ever heard people in the meetings, and this was me. After everybody who relapsed comes up, I say, relapse doesn't have to be part of your program, right? Like, who am I? Relapse doesn't have to. That's true. It doesn't. And I hope it isn't. But guess what? It is a lot of the time. And it doesn't matter how many times you get knocked to the canvas. It's how many times you get back up and how many times you walk through these doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, because they're open. They're open. So if you are coming back, keep coming back. And that's another one too. I came in, I was a real alcoholic. I loved to drink. And at this point I love to drink because it anesthetized me to the pain in my life. That I caused, by the way. and so I come in and I'm thinking they're gonna give me some special instructions that are gonna help me out. They're gonna lay hands on me. Right? And I'm gonna fall on the ground and come up and I go, I don't want to drink anymore. No, what did they say to me? What did they say to me? A drunk who's been binge drinking for 25 years. A drunk who tried to quit over and over again. A drunk who had 2 DUIs. What do they say? Don't drink and come back tomorrow. Okay. What? And I did it. I did it. I didn't drink and I came back the next day. That's crazy. Think about it. I want to drink. I come in. They tell me not to drink. I say, okay. But there's something... There's something about what you guys said and the magic that we all share, this energy that I believe in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that drew me back in. Because I had no one then. No one, because I pushed everybody away. And I'll tell you about Alcoholics Anonymous showing up. This is kind of where I'm going to kind of talk mostly about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, what it's done in my life, what I see it doing in other people's lives. From the moment I came in, I think my second meeting, there are people I didn't even know come up to me and go, hey, I noticed you're riding your bike. And I go, yeah. And they go, you want to ride to a meeting? I'm sorry. What do I owe you? What do I give you? What do I do? Do I have to do your dry cleaning? What do I have to do? Nothing. I had to do nothing. There was a guy, he had barely 2 nickels to run together. He said, if you want to go to a meeting every day at noon, I will pick you up. And he did that for a year. He did that for a year. He had 25 plus years of sobriety, and then he passed away at 27 sober, and it was pretty interesting. So we went to the service, and he had a twin brother, identical. And he came out to do... yeah. So... But he took me to a meeting every day. I did not know these people. Okay, I got sober November 18th. So what? Thanksgiving is a week away, right? Guy and his wife came up to me. They had started that big book group. It was Wednesday night out in New Tampa at Grace Episcopal Church. There's about 50 people. They said, hey, you have anywhere to go for Thanksgiving? I said, no. Come over to my house. Come over to our house. Kids, you know, parents, everybody there. In their home. In their home. I'm a week sober. And then springtime came, hey, you want to go to the state convention in Jacksonville? Sure, I got nothing better to do. Right? I could sit around, but so because I didn't have transportation because of my legal situation and because I had a little bit of an income, I was able to dive right into Alcoholics Anonymous. And we can all do that. Really, we can all do that. If we all drank like I did, if you drank like I did, you could do that, right? And by the way, you don't have to drink like a quote-unquote real alcoholic. You don't have to be a real alcoholic, according to the big books of Alcoholics Anonymous, what a real alcoholic is. Bill talks about it in the 12 and 12. He says something to the effect that young people, scarcely more than potential alcoholics, come in. You know why? Because our tradition says the only requirement for AA membership is the desire to stop drinking. That's it. There's no second requirement. So if you don't register with people who are going to prison and all this sort of thing and losing their license, that's okay. That's all right. If you're here because you want to quit drinking, you are in the right place, according, in my experience, and I'm speaking from the experience of Alcoholics Anonymous. So that's started the journey. Now, I don't know if you guys have seen this on the internet sometimes, it's saying, in alcohol's defense, I've done some pretty dumb shit in sobriety. Right? And I have. My God. Yes, anybody else? Don't raise your hand if you don't want to be embarrassed. Okay. So I have. Oh my gosh. I did stuff in sobriety that I never did when I was drinking. How does that work? I was physically sober, right? Because when we come in, what do we have to do? We have to attack the symptom first, which is drinking. But my real problem, according to Alcoholics Anonymous and according to most spiritual traditions that I see that dovetail nicely into this simple 12-step program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the beautiful thing is that my real problem is this guy. This guy. Someone's going to shout out, I'm glad you're the problem! No. It's not how it works. Me, I'm the problem. The most beautiful line in the book is in the third step prayer. My favorite line is, relieve me of the bondage. Not relieve me of somebody holding me and things like that. So relieve me of the bondage of self. The bondage. I am in bondage to self, to ego, whatever you want to call it. The bundle of thoughts that says I'm better than, worse than. I compare myself to you, this, that, and the other. I can drink more than you. I can be more sober than you. How does that happen? But I hear people say it all the time. He's not that spiritual. I'm more spiritual than he is. How do you do that? I've done it, by the way. I've done it. Or one of my personal favorite, he's not going to make it. He is not going to make it, right? And then, then 10 years later, I'm shuffling back in the doors and that guy's, greeting me. And by the way, I want to say one thing. When I came in here, there was just a phalanx of guys who were greeting me, guys and gals. I don't know, 6, 7, 8 people. Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing? I don't see that a lot of meetings anymore. Greeting is importante. It is so important. It really is, because you know what? You're the first person people see when they're coming in the room with Alcoholics Anonymous. You get to know people. They get to know you. And it's being welcomed. So that's kind of what, that's my story. I've been around for a while. So I will tell you what happened my first night at a meeting. I was, beautiful hair, nice hair, and I was, all disheveled and stuff like that, like kind of like it is now. And I was leaning over, I had coffee, and I was shaking, and I really didn't know what was going on, it was so foggy. But of course, what happens? I turned to my right, and I don't know if I'm probably the only one who's drank over relationships or gotten in trouble in relationships in sobriety. I know I'm the only one. You can't believe it, but I turned my head and I saw. You guys ever meet the one in AA? Wow. Wow. You know what? The one can be met in AA. They can be. I've seen some wonderful relationships develop and blossom in AA. People have been married for years. In our case, it was two flakes to make a blizzard. It was really bad. But anyway, I looked at her my very first night. I said, well, I like that girl in a year and a half. I really like her because I married her. I married that girl. And I was like, I have a relationship in sobriety. I have a sober wife. I'm a sober husband. We're going to do this sober thing together. Until 5 years later, she went out. She had 7 months longer than me, and she spent 4 years out drinking heavily with a lot of consequences. Jail, institution, and almost death. Anybody know that harbor? Is there a harbor around here? That harbor? Fun place. Anyway, jail, institution, and right close to death, right? She lost her license for life. And I was pissed. I was like, how dare you? How dare you drink? This is a sober relationship. How dare you drink, you alcoholic, you? Wow. And I treated that alcoholic like crap. I did. And it was my 50th birthday party. I decided then that, hey, I'm done. I'm going to have a new life. I'm going to be free. I'm going to do my thing. And I'm done, and February of, I don't know, 2011, 2012, something like that, I filed for divorce, we got divorced, and by the way, if you have no property, no children or anything like that, it's, you know, I think it was easydivorce.com or something like that, it was over, I walked in, I walked out, it was done, you know, and a month later, guess what happened a month later, she got a kick-ass sponsor. Kick-ass sponsor. And 5 months later, she started dating a guy in my homeroom. Karma is the bitch, and she will find you. I used to hang with this guy. But you know what? This guy had 23 years of sobriety, quiet as a mouse. I'm kind of a mouthy, nervous guy. You know, I knock coffee over, and I just, and it hurt me. It hurt me. It hurt me, because then, instead of saying, how dare you do that, I was like, how dare you do this? How dare you do this? Bondage of self, right? It doesn't say relieve me of the bondage of alcohol, does it? And there's other places where it talks about self. It doesn't say alcohol, it says self, self, self. And guess what? If you're beating yourself up because you're an alcoholic and you think, oh, I'm so unique. No, everybody in the world is like that. Everybody in the world's looking out for themselves, right? Everybody in the world has this ego thing. And I'm speaking in generalities, of course, that says, I'm better than, I'm worse than, whatever the case may be, right? But guess what? We have this wonderful program that gives us the opportunity every single day to get out of self. And how do I do that? Well, it tells me in the book, working with others. It tells me exactly everything I need. How does it work, Peter? Here's how it works, right? Into action, not into thinking. Into action. Right? It's recovery in motion. Right? It's recovery in motion. For me, I have to keep doing that. Why? Because you guys told me to do that and I saw that it worked for you guys. And so that's what happened. And I sat with that resentment for years. Years. Crazy. One day I picked up a friend's girlfriend at a motel Anyway. They had some kind of relationship, I don't know. Where. No, but he had to work, she was drunk, and I picked her up at the motel, and the cops were there, I got her in my car, this was in Tampa, and I took her to Town and Country Hospital, and I just poured her out of the car, and she was in there. And, you know, and then I got up, she lay on the couch, and I realized, man, I never treated my own wife as well as I treat this alcoholic that I just met 2 months ago. And I went outside, my heart broke wide open, and I cried for half an hour. And it all changed from that point on with that person. But you know what? If it was just about not drinking, right? See, I wouldn't be up here talking to you. I wouldn't. Bill talks about it in the intro to the 12 and 12, and I'm paraphrasing. Alcoholics Anonymous is a set of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous are a set of principles spiritual in their nature that when practiced, as a way of life can expel the obsession to drink and help make the sufferer, that's you and me, and I think other people around us, the sufferer, but for me, the sufferer happily and usefully whole. Let's say it alleviates obsession to drink and the sufferer says, see you later. No. No, because there's that part in the book where the guy says, the tornado's outside, and he opens the cellar door and says, see, Mom, no problem here. I've done that in sobriety many times. No problem here. I have pushed people away in sobriety many a time. I have treated people like crap many times in sobriety. Now, I'm not proud of that, but you know what? Over time, I get some awareness on how to do that. And I get people who say, you know what? I've learned how to do relationships in sobriety. And it's taken me a long, long time to learn how to do that, especially intimate relationships. And I believe I have one today, but I still need to learn. And there's no better teacher than Alcoholics Anonymous and the people in this program. None. Zero. Zilch. I've been to shrinks. I've been to psychologists. I'm on medication. All that stuff. None of it gives me as much personal power as the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. So let me refer to that real quickly. You know, this admission of powerlessness, right? I'm powerless over alcohol and my life has become unmanageable. And there's another clue at the end of how it works that tells me I need to start keep working this program in my life. It's our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostics, and our personal adventures before and after. Before and after I do this stuff, make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that I'm an alcoholic and can't manage my own life. What does that mean? It doesn't mean that I can't, you know, get here on time. It doesn't mean that I can't, you know, balance my bank account. It doesn't mean I can't do a lot of things. What it means to me is I'm not in control of the outcome. I'm not. That's it. I'm not in control of the outcome. The higher power of my own, to be honest with you, I don't understand my higher power. I don't understand. I just know that something is working in my life, and I found that something in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it goes out and it comes back, it goes out, it comes back, it goes out and it comes back. If I kind of stood up here and say, well, you know, these are my qualities of my higher power, blah, 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 then that would kind of put me on an even level as that power. That's what I think anyway. And so that's not been my experience. If that's yours, that's fine. But because of that back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, I'm able to say, okay, this is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to leave it alone. Right? I'm going to leave it alone. Who in here has been told by their sponsor or knows just somehow? Because I just found out stuff in here that just people out there know. I don't know how they know. But expectations are the what? Mother of all resentments. Oh my God, the higher my expectations. It's crazy. It's inversely proportional to my serenity. It's expectation. Now, this is really important. Again, I'm speaking to the program as a design for living. That's what our founders call it, design for living, especially Bill, right? He wrote an article to the Grapevine in January 1958. And by the way, you know, it's a fantastic letter. And it's called The Next Frontier, Emotional Sobriety. See, I want to be well. I want to be all the way well. I don't want to just be a little bit well. I don't want to be just a little bit free, right? I want to be all the way free. I want to be that way. Or if I come back, I want to know how to go out again. Not out, but just, you know, I don't want to go out. But anyway, so, and he talks about it. See, he had a lot of depression in his life, and he talks about that. And there was a period of like 12 years. At which time, he wrote the traditions and all that, where he was really depressed. He said, why can't the 12 steps work to relieve depression? And then he said, hour by hour, I stared at the St. Francis prayer. Here was the answer, all right. Giving love instead of receiving love, all that sort of thing. But how was I to do it? Then he realized what my problem was. My problem was is that I had these expectations of people, and those expectations led to demands. Right? You have an expectation? I used to have those. You know those kind of demands where I might help you move, and then I have this contract with you that you don't know about. But I spring it on you 6 months later, and if you don't help me move or whatever it is, I get kicked off. Right? I get kicked off, so I have these demands. And he talks about that, and it's just a fantastic letter, way ahead of its time. And in spite of what people say about Bill, he's a womanizer and this, that, and the other, and I love Dr. Bob too. I for myself don't study enough about Dr. Bob or listen to him enough, and you know, talk about a humble guy. And this really is about humility and being relieved of the bondage of self. But I'll kind of address this because it speaks to my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, especially the last few years. One of the biggest changes I've seen is people coming into the program who have other issues with other substances, and they're very open about it. Every group treats that differently. No one person or group speaks for Alcoholics Anonymous, right? We do have a tradition, and some people say, if you can't identify yourself as an alcoholic, don't speak. You know, even NA talks about that, and I'll just throw those two. But you know what? They talk about that. We got to respect AA. But you know what? There's nothing I can do about it. There's nothing I can do about it. I'm not going to bitch at somebody because they're doing that. I'm just going to do my own thing. There's a quote by St. Francis. He's talking about the Bible. I think he says something, preach the gospel and when necessary use words. And I say preach recovery and when necessary use words. Right? So people say it's not like the old days. In the old days, they blah, blah, blah. In the old days, in the old days, in the old days. We had 80% success rate. Yeah, when there's 500 people in there, sure. When your sample size is that small, things have changed a lot. You know, there's this one speaker, okay, thanks. There's one speaker, and he calls them open, disgusting meetings. And this literature is bad. Well, you know what? Why would you do that in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous? Why? We have enough enemies, the Orange Papers and everyone else on AA that are bashing. Why bash AA? My sponsor said, pointing the finger at someone else, there is no solution in that. If you want things to be as they were or different, then just do something different. Don't come in and put down the fellowship that saved your life. Just go somewhere else. We don't have a corner on the God or spirituality or even sobriety. Even sobriety. In working with others, Bill says something like, AA says something like this. If your man thinks he can find a spiritual answer somewhere else, it doesn't say, we tell him it'll kill him. I feel sorry for you. Or it says, no, we encourage him to do so. We encourage him to do so. I love AA. So when I talk about AA, I talk about the good things in Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay? Alcoholics Anonymous is all you guys. All you guys. And I appreciate you letting me share. Thanks.